TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Biotechnology, The Last Invasion. Dr. David Suzuki and Dr. Mei-Wan Ho. The World Trade Organization, which came into effect only 5 years ago, has created a huge boom for the biotech industry. Current WTO rules force all 135-plus member countries to import and use bioengineered seeds, grains, and food, even if it violates their local laws and customs and frightens consumers. However, resistance to bioengineered foods is growing worldwide. Europe, India, all of Africa and South Asia, Brazil, the Philippines, South Korea, and Thailand are rejecting biotechnology and work on making illegal the planting and use of such crops. Today's program explains some of the concerns that are leading to what Dr. Mei-Wan Ho calls the new global civil rights movement. She and Dr. David Suzuki are both geneticists. They spoke at the teach-in of the International Forum on Globalization in Seattle in late November 1999. Here is Peter Rossett, Executive Director of Food First, introducing Dr. David Suzuki, followed by Dr. Mei-Wan Ho.
Our first panelist almost needs no introduction. Dr. David Suzuki. Is loved by many who've seen his television program, The Nature of Things, now I understand, in its 40th season, probably the longest-running television program anywhere in the world. Perhaps Canada's best-known environmentalist, author of many books, one of which was Genethics, The Ethics of Engineering Life. His newest book is From Naked Ape to Super Species. He is the president of the David Suzuki Foundation, and it's my pleasure to present to you Dr. David Suzuki.
Thank you. I'd like to just set a context within which the others on the panel can describe in more detail the implications of the biotechnology revolution. I am, by training and by inclination, a geneticist. I graduated in 1961 with a PhD in genetics from the University of Chicago and went on ultimately to have the largest grant in Canada in genetics and the largest lab in genetics during the 70s. In the 1980s, I deliberately left research. I gave up my government grant at the very time that genetics was taking off, because I felt that there was a need for a group of people who could give credible, knowledgeable critiques of what the implications of this new area might be. You see, I knew from personal experience what most geneticists either don't acknowledge or don't even know about, and that is the dark side of this very young science. I am a third-generation Canadian. Like my Canadian-born parents, I too was born in Vancouver. In 1942, shortly after Pearl Harbor, on December 7, 1941, my family was deprived of all rights of citizenship. Our property was confiscated, and we were shipped to camps, internment camps, deep in the Rocky Mountains for a period of 3 years. The crime for which we were punished was the possession of genes that had come from the country of our enemies 3 generations before. What had determined our fate had been set in motion many decades before, unknown to me. In the exuberance of the excitement over the discovery of new principles of heredity that seemed to apply across the plant and animal kingdoms, geneticists began to make wonderful, wild statements about the implications of their discoveries. And I'm sure most of you know that it ultimately led to what was considered a legitimate area of science called eugenics. And some of our most eminent geneticists taught courses in eugenics, wrote textbooks in eugenics, published articles in eugenics journals. Eugenics being the attempt to apply the newfound knowledge of heredity to improve the genetic quality or makeup of human society. Scientists, we found very clearly from history, have been quite willing to extrapolate the wonders of their discoveries and the implications for humankind. Because the kind of thinkings that resulted in the incarceration of Japanese Canadians and Japanese Americans was reflected as well in the very progressive policies of the Nazi Party in Germany that led to the Race Purification Acts and ultimately to the horror of the Holocaust. And I want to remind you that Joseph Mengele, the infamous scientist at Auschwitz, was a geneticist who, at the time he was doing his twin studies at Auschwitz, was carrying two peer-reviewed grants. And that's something I think that if geneticists don't know, and I certainly, even though I had gone to an undergraduate liberal arts college, never knew about this history of genetics, then it's very easy to overlook the possible dangers and continue to ride the bandwagon of excitement and exuberance over what is truly a revolutionary new stage in this infant field, that is biotechnology. Today I see experiments being done in undergraduate laboratories that I never dreamed I would ever live to see. I see questions being answered that I never thought possible to answer within my lifetime. So it's understandable why geneticists are excited. But in our intoxication with the new powers and potential, we now have the possibility to make money. And as we rush to apply our new insights, we forget the fact that the reality is most of our current ideas at the cutting edge of science are wrong. They're irrelevant or in need of radical modification. You know, I said I graduated in 1961. It was a good university and we were hot. We knew what DNA was. We'd heard of operons and cistrons. We knew about chromosomes and genetic regulation. And we set out to conquer the world with our knowledge. Today I go into a laboratory and I tell students the models, the ideas that we believed were so hot in 1961. And you know, they fall on the floor laughing. Because seen in 1999, the ideas of 1961 seem absurd, and they are. But the very nature of science is that most of our ideas at the cutting edge of knowledge are wrong. That's how science progresses. So then what is the rush to apply these incremental knowledge, gains of knowledge that we have as we publish? They're trumpeted as breakthroughs. One of the most overused and wrong words that I can imagine through in the media. Breakthroughs. Biotechnologists, it seemed to me, want to have it both ways. They want to get lots of people to invest in it because it's a growth area on the stock market by saying that it is a revolutionary science with enormous potential. But when critics then suggest that there are maybe equally dangerous possibilities, they say, no, this isn't revolutionary stuff at all. It happens in nature. It's just DNA. We're just moving DNA around. And that happens in nature all the time. Well, I don't think you can have it both ways. It can't be revolutionary on the one hand, but not on the other. In nature, genes don't normally transfer laterally or horizontally across species boundaries. And we know genes are not selected by evolution or natural selection on an individual basis. The entire genome is an integrated entity in which the sum total of those genes and their expression in the phenotype is what is selected. So when you transfer a gene horizontally from one species to another, you alter completely the context within which that gene finds itself. And we simply haven't had the time to work out what the basic principles are when we do this lateral transfer. All of our concepts of the inheritance of genes and the behavior of genes is based on the study within a species. You cross a male and a female, you look at their offspring, cross them, and you follow down in a vertical fashion within a species. Now we do it horizontally, and there geneticists make what I believe is a fundamental mistake. They assume that the principles governing heredity vertically are going to apply equally horizontally. There's simply no reason to make that assumption. The ecological consequences of the transgenic organisms, I think, are immense, and geneticists ought to know better than to rush all of these out into the field as soon as possible. Now, in Canada, we've gone far too far. This has been slipped into the food stream. There are over 40 different GMOs already in our diets. We have no labeling. There has been no public discussion about this. And my position is, at the very, very least, there should be mandatory labels. Why? We learned very expensively that research experiments were done with members of the general public in the 50s and 60s without their being informed and without their getting consent. And we know today that informed consent is an absolute minimum before people become a part of any kind of experiment. We are part of an experiment with no informed consent. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Those words from the author of the best-selling genetics textbook of all time that all of these geneticists were brought up reading, so they should heed his words. Our next speaker, Dr. Mei-Wan Ho. She's a senior academic at the Open University in England, also a geneticist and biophysicist. And she's written a wonderful book that probably many of you have read in either its first or its second edition, called Genetic Engineering, Dream or Nightmare. Dr. Mei-Wan Ho, thank you.
The biotech debate has united the world and also united all of society. It's a wonderful thing. It's not just the Europeans that are rejecting genetically engineered produce. It's also India, the whole of Africa, you've just heard, the whole of South Asia, Brazil, they won't grow any, Philippines, South Korea, Thailand, Australia, New Zealand, the list is growing. In fact, the more knowledge people have, the more they resist genetic engineering biotechnology. Now, the debate has captured the public imagination of the civil global society, and it is joining up and turning into the biggest, most inclusive civil rights movement against the corporate empire and the WTO. You see, you are all brought here because of these human ideals that we are fighting for. And I salute you all. I'm here also on behalf of more than 140 scientists from 27 countries who are calling for a moratorium because of threats to health and biodiversity. We are calling for a ban on patents because those are deeply immoral. Patents on life forms and living processes. You have heard that these patents are basically thefts from nature herself. They are expropriations of the inventive genius and knowledge of indigenous communities, as well as of generations of Western scientists who have worked selflessly for the public good. These patents threaten food security. They violate basic human rights and dignity. They compromise health care and impede scientific as well as medical research. And they are also against the welfare of animals. There is a lot of misinformation and disinformation going about on genetic engineering from the biotech industry and their supporters, our governments as well. Contrary to what they would like us to believe, GM crops are neither necessary nor beneficial. They are, in fact, a dangerous diversion from the main tasks of providing health and food security around the world. To put it bluntly, the existing technologies are crude, unreliable, uncontrollable, and unpredictable. They don't qualify as technologies, let alone patentable inventions. The so-called technologies are being further misguided by a scientific paradigm that is fundamentally flawed, out of date, and in conflict with the scientific findings. The promises to genetic engineering crops to fix nitrogen, to improve yield, to resist drought, salt, and so on, have been around for at least 30 years. I'm old enough to remember them. And it's a list of broken promises. The miracle crops have not appeared. Instead, all we have now, 70% are tolerant to broad-spectrum herbicides. Companies making crops that are tolerant to their own herbicides. And the rest, they have BT toxin genes from bacteria in order to make them kill insects. They were 65 million acres planted in 1998 in the USA, Argentina, and Canada. And the latest surveys show that they offer no benefit whatsoever. The GM soyas, over 8,000 field trials have been assessed. They yielded on average 6.7% less and required 2 to 5 times more herbicides. Herbicide-tolerant weeds and BT-resistant insect pests have already evolved. The broad-spectrum herbicides not only kill wild plant species indiscriminately, they also threaten wildlife. They also cause birth defects in humans and cancers in humans. The BT plants kill beneficial insects, including bees and lacewings, and the pollen from BT plants are toxic to the monarch butterflies. What we have now is poverty and hunger amidst plenty. Why? Because of corporate monopoly. Corporations already control 75% of world trade in cereals. The new patents on seeds will make it worse because farmers can't save and replant seeds, and 80% of farmers in the third world depend on that. The Christian Aid report concludes that GM crops will cause unemployment, exacerbate third world debt, threaten sustainable agriculture, and damage the environment, and it predicts famine for the poorest countries. It is clear that GM crops are of no benefit, and they cannot feed the world, and the risks are enormous. You know the children's joke about what you get when you cross impossible things, like a spider with a goat? Well, it ceases to be a joke anymore, because this is what genetic engineering does. It transfers genes across biological species barriers, and any and every species can be, you know, crossed like in this way. So in fact, they have already tried to engineer spider genes into goats in order to make the poor female goats produce spider silk in their milk. And, of course, human genes have been transferred into cow, pigs, sheep, mice, bacteria, you name it. The most immediate danger of this kind of technology is that it is random and unpredictable. The genetic engineer cannot control where and how the foreign genes are going to be integrated into the organism's genetic material. Animals often end up horribly deformed, even those that are supposed to be successes, by the way. And plants end up with unexpected toxins and allergens. We have a very eminent scientist, Akhet Pushtai, who lost his job because he dared to tell the public that the two GM potato lines he tested were unexpectedly toxic to the young rats. Now, a more insidious danger is horizontal gene transfer, which David Suzuki has mentioned already. It is the transfer of the genetic material itself directly to unrelated species, which is what genetic engineering sets out to do in the first place. So it is designed to cross species barriers. Now, this has the potential to create new viruses and new bacteria that cause diseases and to spread antibiotic resistance and drug resistance among the pathogens. I'm certainly not the first to say that, nor the only one. The pioneers of genetic engineering in the 1970s called for a moratorium in the famous Asilomar Declaration. Why? Because they were worried precisely about that, those things. Unfortunately, commercial pressures cut the moratorium short. And within the past 20 years, which is as old as commercial genetic engineering biotechnology, we have seen the dreadful accelerated resurgence of drug and antibiotic diseases. Viruses are emerging with rapidity, with unprecedented frequencies. Geneticists have indeed found that horizontal gene transfer and recombination have been responsible for generating these new viruses and bacteria and spreading drug and antibiotic resistance genes, which make these diseases untreatable. Why is that so? Basically, because in genetic engineering, many viral and bacterial genes, including antibiotic genes, resistance genes, are being combined in new combinations that have never existed before, and they are introduced by invasive methods that make them more unstable and inherently more capable of spreading horizontally than the plant's own genes and the organism's own genes, which have been adapted to stay together and be stable for millions, if not hundreds of millions of years. They have an integrity which must be respected. The British Medical Association are taking these dangers very seriously. They call for an indefinite moratorium until there are further studies on the spread of antibiotic resistance, the new allergies arising, and also the effects of transgenic DNA. Why? Because transgenic DNA, the DNA that is transferred into these plants and animals, by the way, can actually jump also into our cells. And one of the effects of that is cancer. UK scientists who work for our Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries and Food themselves, who are advising our government, have drawn attention to these dangers and are warning of horizontal gene transfer, not only from the plants to bacteria in the soil, but they're saying this DNA can also spread via pollen and dust to farm workers, to people who are food processors, and also the general public, because our mouth and gut and respiratory tracts have bacteria, dangerous bacteria, some of them, which can pick up these genes, antibiotic resistance genes. They are also saying that the DNA can also get into mammalian cells, including our own. Now, the whole enterprise of genetic engineering biotechnology is misguided and has little chance of success because the paradigm, the scientific paradigm on which it depends, has been thoroughly discredited at least 15 years ago. Genetics has changed out of all recognition. The old paradigm of a very simplistic reductionist view of genes determining characteristics in a very linear, straightforward way. They do not, by and large, interact with other genes or substantially with the environment, and that they are stable and get passed on to the next generation, except for very rare random mutations. Within the past 20 years, we now know that genes work in highly complex networks. There's a lot of crosstalks between the genetic networks. If anything, they are actually extremely sensitive, dynamic, and responsive to all levels of the environment. And the environment can cause the genes to mutate, to rearrange, to jump around, to do all sorts of things, so much so that geneticists themselves have coined the term the fluid genome. In fact, the genes have a very complicated ecology. The new in genetics is radically holistic and ecological. And you need a balanced ecology in order to keep genes and genomes stable. Despite all the hype of benefits and successes, there has been none in genetic engineering. On the contrary, sustainable organic agriculture all over the world is working. And that's what we should go for. Just to end with a few words, as a scientist, I'm also happy to report that just as organic revolution is occurring in agriculture, there is an organic revolution going on in science. And what it does, it reaffirms the holistic ecological perspective that many indigenous cultures have never lost touch with. And it puts an end to the dominant WTO, World Bank, IMF culture that treats organisms as machines and life necessities as commodities, that glorifies competition and sanctions exploitation in the name of the struggle of the survival of the fittest and the biggest. Instead, we begin to appreciate the universal entanglement of everything there is in nature. And that will transform the whole meaning and texture of our lives. Let's go for it. Thank you very much.
That was Dr. Mei Wan Ho, senior academic at the Open University in England. She is a geneticist and biophysicist and the author of Genetic Engineering, Dream or Nightmare. She and Dr. David Suzuki were recorded at the teach-in of the International Forum on Globalization on the eve of the WTO Summit in Seattle in November 1999. You can get a 60-minute audio tape on the WTO and biotechnology with Dr. Mei Wan Ho and David Suzuki for $12. Or you can get the 80-page transcript of the full series, The Day the WTO Stood Still, on issues of genetic engineering, privatization, water and food security, environmental impacts, and much more. That's $12 as well. For a credit card order, dial our toll-free number, 1-877-TUC-TAPE. That's 877-TUC-TAPE. Or send us a check to TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141. That's TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141, USA. TUC Radio's website is www.tucradio.org. My name is Mariah Gilarden. Thank you for listening.